Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Teresa, and we're talking with the people who are growing, raising, harvesting, and producing food here in our bountiful coastal region.
And also to those who are selling, cooking, serving, and eating the freshest food available in our communities.
Join us today in a conversation about what's in season right now here on the North Coast.
Today, we are talking with chocolatier Peggy Bondurant, owner of the co-op, right? I mean,
one of the owners.
And you can say your name again.
Peggy Bondurant.
Bondurant. Oh, it's close. One of the owners of the Blue Scorcher Bakery and Cafe,
yes.
And where they sell your chocolate, mm-hmm. too. So
welcome Peggy.
Thank you.
So we always like to ask everybody how they ended up on the North Coast. And so you've been here for a while, but did you grow up here?
No, I'm from Delaware originally. And I met my husband in Denver, and we traveled. Our idea was to travel to the West Coast, and we thought California, but he ended up getting a job in Newport, Oregon, and that's where we stayed for many years. We moved up the coast after a brief time away when we saw in the Seattle Sunday Times a beautiful sunny picture of the Astoria Bridge in that, you know, that one week in February when it's always sunny.
Oh, yeah. Was that like 20 years ago?
That's when it was, more like 40.
Yeah.
And we thought, oh, what a beautiful place. Looks like a little San Francisco. And we moved here. So.
Wow.
And you've had about two sunny days ever since.
Yeah. Right. Last summer was great.
Yeah.
And then were you a teacher here?
I taught at Jewell School for 18 years.
Oh,
and
did.
I was a Head Start Center coordinator for 14 years before that.
And then you happily retired for a time.
I retired to work at the Blue Scorcher Bakery.
Uh-huh.
That's my retirement job. And
where did the chocolate come from? Because that wasn't what you were doing originally, but somehow chocolate started to work its way into your life.
Well, I've always loved chocolate, and I went to a co-op potluck, and Matt brought raw chocolate. That was my first experience with raw chocolate. And I tasted it and fell in love with it. And from there, I started researching chocolate and how it was made. I developed a recipe because Matt couldn't remember the exact amounts for the recipe that he made. And developed the raw chocolate. And from there, I ended up getting a certificate from Ecole Chocolat, which is an online chocolate class.
Mm-hmm.
I learned to make truffles and how to temper chocolate and just all kinds of everything about chocolate. So then I did a couple of internships. I did one in Vancouver, BC with Rachel Sawatsky and learned a lot from her about producing truffles. And then from there, I did another internship through, once again, Ecole Chocolat. We all are graduates
mm-hmm.
from that that online program, and they offer internships through that.
Yeah.
So when you say internships, you're going to a place that's making them, making chocolate. I mean, they're producing chocolate. I mean, what was your internship?
So with Rachel, she owns Coco Nymph, which is a chocolate shop, and she makes her own truffles. She buys chocolate already made to use in her truffles and mm-hmm. chocolate for hot chocolate and her bars, chocolate bars that she makes. And then from there, Barbara Wilson, also an Ecole graduate, offered an internship either in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where she has a shop, or in Mindo, Ecuador, where she has a retirement home that they never retired to, her and her husband, Joe. So,
and so you went to Ecuador for that internship?
Yes, and that was for the one month in August of 2010. And there I learned how to make chocolate from the bean to the bar. And I wanted to go and meet the farmers and see how they were treated and see cacao beans on the trees, and it was a wonderful experience. I totally loved it.
I just want to interrupt here because there's several words and terminologies, things that you've used, and I just want to maybe sort of bring some definitions and clarification in here, because even though I think we all think we know what we're talking about when we talk about chocolate, some of the stuff that you're doing is very different, and you've used words like raw chocolate. So describe, you know, maybe go through some of the different types of chocolate. What's raw chocolate as opposed to not raw chocolate, or bittersweet chocolate, or milk chocolate, or what are all those different things that you're talking about?
Okay, so raw chocolate has the advantage of retaining a lot of its antioxidants,
mm-hmm.
and because it's not heated above 118 degrees. I use 118 degrees. That's kind of a arbitrary figure, somewhat, but 118 degrees, and I only add agave and salt to my raw chocolates, which is raw organic cocoa butter and raw organic cocoa powder. So you mix all that up, and that's my raw chocolate. So it's not heated above 118. Excuse me. And so the bars that I make, that is tempered chocolate, and that means you raise the chocolate. This is using nibs. So
these are little chunky bits of
I bring the chocolate. Nibs and I grind them, and mm-hmm. I add sugar. It's the only thing that I add. A tiny bit of cocoa butter from the same source to keep the machine from gumming up. And to temper chocolate, you have to raise it to a certain degree over 118. Mm-hmm. And then you have that gets rid of the bad molecules. You bring it down to on a hand temper on a marble, and so I take about a third of the chocolate in the bowl and you agitate it, which gets the molecules, it cools it down and gets the molecules all in a little row, which gives it scientifically the snap and sheen that makes it beautiful and stay fresh for a long time. It's quite a long time.
And then
after I cool it on the marble, then I put that third back in the bowl and bring the temperature. For a dark chocolate, it's around 88 degrees. And so once it gets to that 88 degrees, all the molecules in that bowl are all going the same direction, and it's tempered. So I put it in the molds and wrap it up.
And then wrap it up. Well, so I want to go back just a little further to those trees. All right. So cocoa grows in pods, right?
Yes.
Cacao. It's cacao, right? The cacao
tree. Theobroma cacao is the scientific name for the tree that it grows on. And it grows around the world between the 20th parallel north and the 20th parallel south around the equator. So anywhere in that area, you can grow a cacao if you have enough heat and enough water, so rainfall.
So the place you were in Ecuador had a cacao orchard?
So I actually had to go to Puerto Quito, which was about an hour and a half away, because Mindo is in a little valley, but it's a little higher up, and they had some cacao trees growing in their yard, but they weren't, it's not produced there a whole lot. So we went to an organic cooperative mm-hmm. to buy our embaba, which is the inside of the cacao pod. So the farmers would go out to their farms and cut their pods down, and then they cut them open and scoop out the insides. There's a white baba that covers the cacao seeds that are inside the pod, and we would buy the whole inside of the pods fresh from the farmers when we went that day. They would open them up in the morning, and we would pick them up.
Is the seeds, when you talk about cocoa nibs, or is that the seed, or is that
okay? So the beans are inside
the
pod,
okay.
And we would bring the whole insides. It's this white fluffy stuff surrounding the beans, and we would take it back to Mindo chocolate makers and put it into first a fermentation box. And when it starts fermenting, it heats up, of course, and the baba drips off, and they would make syrup out of that so that nothing was wasted. And then every 2 days, the chocolate is moved to a different down to a box to continue the oxygenation and the fermentation. Mm-hmm. And then after 6 days, they determine that it's that was the best time to ferment. From there, it goes to drying racks, and it dries for 7 to 21 days just out in the air. I mean, it's covered, yeah. but until it's dry, and then it goes to the roaster, where it roasts for about 40-45 minutes. And I was able to taste the difference between a bean that was not roasted long enough and one that was. It really just brings out the flavor, like they say. And then from there, so those are the nibs that okay. I would get at okay. that point.
Once they've been roasted.
Once and they've been roasted.
And that's the raw chocolate, the
and
base
that
for
is
the
okay. inside of the bean, and that's... Yeah, so that's what I get.
I have so much more respect for a chocolate bar now. I had no idea it was that complicated. It's amazing to think that all that process goes before you even get the nibs. There's all that work that's gone into it, and then you get the nibs, and then that's where you start to do your work.
So I'd like to mention that when we go to pick up the inside of the pod, we only take, and by we, I mean chocolate, Mindo chocolate makers, we would only take the white, fluffy, beautiful insides. There are other types of mm-hmm. brownish, you know, not so beautiful embaba that people do buy and do make into chocolate bars. And, you know, you've probably had it and it's probably mm-hmm. tasted fine. But that's one of the reasons why I think my bars are special, is because we only take the best. And I know where it's from and how it was grown. I met... five of the farmers. We went to five different farms, and those farmers were great. They all had their machetes strapped on, and they each knew where all of their trees were. I mean, they just take you out to look at their trees and show mm-hmm. you. They're very proud of their cacao trees. And anyway, it was great.
You were mentioning earlier too that like the whole. I mean, this is the people that you buy from is a sort of a fair trade situation too. And I know cocoa. Or cacao has some, you know, a little bit of, you know, labor issues around the world. And so you feel really confident about where you're buying your cacao from. I know there's...
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And that can be a real issue to know. It's like kind of like with coffee and all those things.
Right.
Sometimes you just really want to know where the source is to make sure that you're not supporting unfair labor practices.
Right.
Right. And so, too, you know, you see different origins. That's terminology they use a lot for chocolate. Can you really tell the difference between where... chocolate has come from? It sounds like yes. No?
I don't know that I could. I know that I definitely prefer my chocolate now, but I might have just developed a taste for it. But for all those reasons, though, that mm-hmm. I know it's really good. And
you feel better eating it because you
yes.
know it's...
Sure.
Yes, but it does taste good, too. Yeah.
It does actually taste
really
good.
So I don't
good.
Think I could tell a bar that came from Africa, you know, over
right.
a bar that...
I was just curious because sometimes they label chocolates
yes,
like that.
That's very popular right now.
And,
single
and,
origin and
well, and because I think people look at coffee like that, right?
Right.
So maybe that's kind of the right. natural. And then how long does it take for the cacao to ripen? I'm is it a
Well, it well, there are different mm-hmm. there are different types of cacao trees. It takes 4 years for the Nacional brand, which is an Ecuadorian indigenous plant that is known for its flavor, and which is what Joe and Barbara Wilson are trying to promote in Ecuador because it was wiped out in the 30s. And these farmers say that their brand is Nacional, and so that's what we're paying more for. And they've also developed a CCN51, a hybrid mm-hmm. and genetically engineered that it produces a lot faster than the Nacional, but it's not as disease resistant, and it makes more cocoa butter than but the Nacional, it doesn't have the flavor that the Nacional brand does.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, this is really great. We're already halfway through our show and we're going to take a little station break. You are listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, and streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you are just joining us, we're talking with Peggy Bondurant from the Blue Scorcher Bakery. And I said it wrong again. I can tell, Peggy. Bondurant, right? Okay.
And we're talking about chocolate, which I think is just I know personally it's a wonderful indulgence, and it's one of those things that it was interesting. A couple of years ago, there was a lot of popularity about people wanting to eat like a 100-mile diet and only eat locally produced foods and, you know, not eat anything that you couldn't grow yourself. And I just remember thinking, I just can't give up chocolate. Chocolate and coffee, those are my weaknesses. I'm okay, and it's good if you can do the fair trade thing, that's awesome, but there's something so wonderful about chocolate. And the chocolates that you're making are amazing, I have to say. And so maybe tell us a little bit about the different kinds of things that you make. I mean, you make truffles, which, now, what's a truffle? Not the weird thing the pigs dig up. It's different when you're talking about chocolate.
So a truffle is basically there's a chocolate base that I use that I flavor. And right now I'm still making just the three kinds, a raspberry truffle, which is chocolate and raspberry liqueur and raspberry puree and some butter and some cream. And so you mix that up, and then I ball them up into little balls, and then I enrobe them in 70% organic chocolate. And so enrobing is just the process of dipping it into tempered chocolate and covering the whole thing to help with its shelf life.
And then
because when it hardens, right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the cream could go bad in that. Now, a tempered chocolate bar from Ecuador, say, is good for years.
Mm-hmm.
But the truffles with cream, dairy products, they have a shorter shelf life of 2 to 3 months, maybe, mm-hmm. if it's kept cold.
Yeah.
I make a Grand Marnier truffle, which is semi-sweet chocolate, which is just not as dark as the 70%, so it has a little bit more sugar. The percentages just mean how much chocolate is in the chocolate as opposed to other ingredients such as sugar. Sometimes people put lecithin in. Milk chocolate, of course, has milk products, but I only make dark chocolate because mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. my favorite. So the Grand Marnier, I use semi-sweet organic chocolate, Grand Marnier liqueur, cream, and the cream is infused with orange rind.
Ooh, that sounds so good.
And then that I just roll in cocoa powder, and then I make a square mint truffle, which uses coconut oil and no dairy products, and it is enrobed. And that's, I use a dark chocolate for that, and it's enrobed in the 70% also.
Wow. I love the word enrobed.
Yes.
You know, it makes it sound so elegant.
Okay. And well, I'm they trying, are. It's really, like it's the royalty. Little chocolates are so wonderful. I mean, you don't need much. They're just a little small thing, but it's very satisfying.
Right.
And then your bars, right? You've got
the bars. And then I'm making a caramel, which are molded chocolate. Once again, the 70%, and it's poured into a mold, and then you... and then you dump that out and refrigerate it, and then fill that with, do a caramel and I do an almond crunch, and then you have to cover the bottom so that, and then cool it again, and then they pop out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a molded chocolate.
Right.
And then the Ecuadorian bars, of course, I do nuts. I do walnut, almond, hazelnut. I do a butter crunch, Ecuadorian bar, right. And mm-hmm. Spicy jalapeno.
Oh, yum.
Which I haven't had a big demand for those, so I'm thinking about making them again now, but I don't have any of those
on
hand.
Do you do one with chili?
That's the spicy
is
jalapeno
the
is
okay.
A yeah. jalapeno chili and with some cinnamon and,
uh-huh.
yeah.
So how much do you get to play around and just experiment with chocolate to come up with these things? Do you do a lot of playing, or is it kind of you're into production now more?
Well, since I'm retired, I try not to work too much.
Yeah.
And that's why I've tried to keep things pretty much the way I've started, because I have many ideas about different types of chocolate to try, and I do different things at Christmas, and we have Valentine boxes right now, but... you could do anything.
You could go
chocolate.
In a lot of different directions.
Bacon and chocolate, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's all kinds of salted caramels and,
yeah.
you know, you can go so many different directions. So at the bakery, I'm pretty careful to not experiment too much unless I'm able to save any mistakes. And I have seconds out right now of uh-huh. my caramels because... the enrobing process didn't. They're not as shiny as I like, uh-huh. and beautiful, and so. You know, you can pick those up for a really good deal.
I'm sure they still taste fantastic.
But, oh my gosh, they do. Yeah, yeah. Like caramels.
So I have made different times been making ganache, and I had the chocolate seas.
Okay, explain what that means. I'm sorry, you're making ganache and the chocolate seas.
So ganache is actually what the inside of the truffle is. Right. Basically, it's when you take chocolate and you add something to it, usually a cream.
And it becomes a very thick sort of paste.
Yes.
Sort of.
When you put it back in the fridge, it hardens, yeah. mm-hmm. and then it's thick.
Yeah.
Yes. And water, a few drops of water will make chocolate seas, which means it turns into this like glob.
Oh, it's just terrible. I mean, right. It's so like, oh no.
So
I can't
just a
this
couple
happened.
Of drops of water would make yes. it just be disastrous.
Yes.
And then you can't do anything with it. You have to throw it away.
Well, it's.
Is it salvageable?
The texture changes. I mean, it's right. just ugly, actually. It's so sad.
Now, I have seen Rachel in Vancouver take a seas chocolate and turn it back in, but. To a usable chocolate, but I have to say, the one time I tried it, it didn't work at all.
Yeah, what would you do? I mean,
well, you warm it up, you warm it back up, but then you have to add something to it to offset the water that might be in there. So maybe more cream or something.
So I just think it sort of says how actually there is so much art to doing what you're doing. I mean, chocolate's sensitive, yes. and you really have to actually know what you're doing. I mean,
it's as much chemistry as anything yeah. else. I mean, that's what's fascinating about a lot of cooking, I think, in general, is that there's a lot of chemistry. And it sounds like chocolate is just more so than that, especially doing it in the style that you're doing it.
Right.
So I was reading up a little just on the history of chocolate, and I was rather amazed to discover how ancient it is. I mean, I think we were talking a little earlier, like 4,000 years ago.
4,000 is that's the latest that I've or the earliest that I've read about. But it seems like that's always changing. But it's been found. Chocolate residue has been found to 4,000 years old, and it was used by the Olmecs were known as the father of chocolate because they were the first ones that they know of that actually. Grew a crop of cacao,
and where was course, that? Mesoamerica
South America.
And is that where cacao's native to? I mean, I know it's grown in Africa, but it's not. Is it native to Africa? I don't think that it is.
I think the first record they think it came from the Central
Amazon
and
forest.
South America mm-hmm. tropical forests,
and then on mm-hmm. the Pacific coast of Mexico, they mm-hmm. found some pretty old stuff there too, but. The Olmecs and the Aztecs and the Mayans, and all used it. They all knew the value of it. It was even used as a currency
right.
by some tribes. And so.
And from the earliest days, it was more as a liquid and a flavoring in food.
Well, Xocoatl is what the. the word for chocolate is, and it stands for bitter water. So they didn't have sugar back then, so they just drank it as a. Flavored water, a chocolate water, and they
which would be totally different.
Yes, yeah. totally different. And they gave it to their warriors going into battle, much like we give it to our soldiers going off to mm-hmm. war in their rations. We include chocolate bars still, I think.
Wow.
And
so,
you're right. Yeah.
Montezuma was supposed to have drunk 50 goblets a day of this stuff. I don't know.
yeah.
And great stories.
Clearly it has a long history, so you're carrying on a tradition. But I think what we do with chocolate these days is probably not what they were doing 4,000 years ago.
No.
So I think it was the 19th century, right, when, was it Cadbury? The famous Cadbury in England. Made the first pressed chocolate, which is kind of the modern day chocolate bar. Does that sound right?
Right. It was the machine age that really got it mm-hmm. going and produced in large quantities. And even today, just making the caramels and the almond crunch, they're so labor intensive to be as an artisan chocolate, just to be doing them
by hand.
I really understand the value of machines,
bet.
But.
So do you still like chocolate? Do you still like eating it? I mean, I know sometimes when you work with something a lot, you can get kind of tired of it, but
I still love chocolate. I don't like other chocolate so much. I sort of don't bother with other chocolate so much because I don't eat that much. And so mm-hmm. when I eat it, I want it to be mine just because for those reasons I mentioned that I know where it came from and it's really good. So, yes. I still love chocolate, but only dark chocolate, pretty much. I
Well, and there's all sorts of health reasons that are coming out, right? How wonderful yes. chocolate is for you.
Right, great for depression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I knew there was. I've always felt
that's
sad
why
about
it's so popular in
Astoria.
Energy, yeah.
A little energy
and do you cook with chocolate at all? Do you
I
ever?
Don't do a lot of cooking with chocolate. I have had mole sauce that is absolutely exquisite, but that's another time-consuming to make a really good mole sauce is... takes a lot of time.
And has your production changed since? I mean, are you pretty much at kind of like your peak production? You don't think of yourself as really doing more than you're doing?
No. With the grant, one of the things that we're trying to
And explain the grant that you're talking about,
well,
too.
It's a rural business enterprise grant through the state of Oregon. And it is to help us, the new owners. There are five of us joined Joe and Iris in this worker cooperative now, and only a couple of us know anything about how to run a business, and so we are through this grant taking business classes and trying to increase our production and our marketing and add some new employees and I would like to do some wholesale of chocolate. That's been my goal, but once again I don't want to work full time anymore. Yeah. So
it's interesting how you're going about that, Peggy.
You sound very retired to me.
So I have Nick. I keep trying to get him to work more for me. But
yeah.
Well, and do you like to? I mean, it must be fun to also share this knowledge that you've taken all this time to gain and train other people. I mean, it's fun to have somebody else know what the heck you're talking about, because it sounds like a pretty complicated process.
It is really fun to train other people, and I love to share with people in the bakery, and even people that come into the bakery. I always like to pass out. I always like to pass out samples, and people love chocolate.
Yeah,
so
they do.
They always say, "Oh my gosh, I love your chocolate." Well, you know, because they love chocolate, which is kind of.
So, what is your chocolate? I think of your chocolate as Peggy's chocolate, but do you have a name for your?
Well, I did name it Domingo Chocolate when I was in Ecuador, but I've decided that I didn't want to start my own chocolate shop. I would like to travel a little bit more, actually, and so I've just kept it as part of Blue Scorcher. I want Blue Scorcher to benefit from it, and that gave me a place to explore chocolate and come up with new ideas and do things, try things that I wanted to, and...
That's great.
And I hope to be doing more of that, too.
So if people are interested, people are out there, and they want to get your chocolate, come in and taste your chocolate, maybe tell them a little bit about how to get in touch with the Blue Scorcher, where to find it. It's Duane Street.
The Scorcher is located at 1493 Duane Street in Astoria, and we're open 7 days a week from 8 to 5. In the afternoon, we switch to a tea time menu at 3 o'clock, so mostly breakfast and lunch, and
you have a website that
we
people want to find out more about.
BlueScorcher.com.
I think it's BlueScorcher.com, yeah.
And so we have breads and pastry and kitchen, a cafe, and of course coffees and teas, and so
and of course your chocolates.
How
about that? Well, thank you so much. We're at the end of our show, and I just want to say thank you for joining us on today's Food Talk, fresh conversations about local food on the North Coast.
Thanks so much, Peggy, and thanks to our engineer Mark Albrecht and to Luke and Katie for our theme song.
And this show will be available as a podcast at coastradio.org.
Comes from